Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I'll be talking with author Nancy Wesson. She has come to the program to talk to us about her new book, Moving Your Aging Parents. Nancy Wesson is a writer, international speaker, feng shui expert, professional organizer, and consultant serving clients in Central Texas and Washington, D.C. She combines a toolbox of skills to create mental, physical, and spiritual environments that support wellness, peak performance, emotional well-being, and life transition. After receiving her master's degree in audiology from University of Texas, her work with hearing-impaired clients and the elderly prompted deeper research into the relationship between one's surroundings and success. Her background in mediation and victim services further supports her clients in dealing with special needs. While assisting her own mother through multiple relocations, Nancy realized that all of her training merged to help her mother in ways that healed their relationship and transformed their lives. Her first book, Moving Your Aging Parents, offers compassionate guidance to others navigating their own transitions or helping loved ones. Nancy's syndicated column for the Austin Homesteader and other articles appear on her website, FocusOnSpace.com. So I am happy to have Nancy on the program. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Nancy.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Well, congratulations. Your first book. You must feel wonderful.
I do. I'm really excited.
Yes. So tell our audience today how you actually came to write about this particular topic, because you could have written about many topics, but why this one about moving aging parents?
Well, you're right. I have written about many other topics, and I like to write. So as I'm having experiences, somehow they're always forming into articles in my mind. But as I was helping my mother through her third transition, two were the result of having a break-in in her home, and one of those resulted in a significant move. And as I was helping her with that move, and then a second one after that, it occurred to me that even with all of the practice that I had had with clients in this varied background of skills, I needed everything in my toolbox to navigate this process with her, and still it was just overwhelming. And I think is so often the case, even though you are a professional in one realm, when you're dealing with family, the emotional issues crowd some of the other things out. And as I was driving back, I realized that I was just one of many thousands of people who were going to be greeting this transition, and we could all use some help navigating that process.
Absolutely. Did you have any guidance, or were you kind of going at this free form?
Oh, no, I was going at it free form. Every situation that came up, I realized that I needed to step back frequently and really think about what was going on for her and try to take myself and my own needs out of the equation long enough to pay attention to what she was dealing with, and that ultimately served us really well, but it was strictly seat of the pants.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is one thing I love about how you have written your book. It's very conscious, and you take a very much a holistic approach to this critical life transition, and you include both the well-being of the aging parent and the adult children or adult child who is being the one having to take care of the situation. So tell us about this whole family approach that you went with.
Well, our needs are so integrated with each other, but they are also competing needs. We as the adult children have families and lives and jobs of our own, and we're trying to do our best to support those activities and maintain income and sanity and all of that. And our parents are, at this stage of life, frequently becoming very needy. And so you really can't address the situation unilaterally. I think you really do have to step back and say, okay, what are my parents' needs? What's really driving this situation? How can I make this a more gentle process, a more compassionate process? Because in the end, we are both served by that process of being present and compassionate. In the past, I've done services in mediation, and I've been able to, as an observer, watch and see what happens when people feel listened to. And so much of the conflict that we experience, I think especially with our families, comes from the feeling that assumptions are being made or that decisions are being made for us and that nobody's really listening. And so much resolution can occur when we are really listening with the heart instead of just going on bulldozing our way through just to get this project finished by the weekend.
So it seems to me like, from what you're saying, that this type of a transition, it obviously can bring to the surface many unresolved parent-child issues. So this whole process can really be transformative.
It is transformative. It certainly was for me, and I believe I'm not alone in that process. And, of course, that was part of the impetus for the book, is knowing that what I experienced with my mother can be experienced by other people.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. I think every single one of us as adult children has had the experience of going back to mom and dad's house, and all of a sudden we discover that we're that teenager.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really horrifying when we discover that. And so nothing like going home to our family of origin or our home of origin can stimulate those old memories that we've been able to tuck away for a long time, as long as we're in our own territory, our own domain. So being aware to begin with that those are going to come up gives you a heads up for what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows you, if you know they're coming and can anticipate that, it allows you, when you hear that teenager's voice about to come out of your mouth, to say, wait a minute.
Yeah, hold on.
I'm going to be an adult here, and I'm going to really pay attention to what's going on. And that saved us more often than I can tell you, just that simple awareness that our roles not only had changed, but had the capacity for greater change. And we were able to put to bed so many unresolved issues and really come to appreciate each other as adults and still have our conflict and still love and laugh about it afterwards.
Oh, that's fantastic. I know that you do mention this in your book as to the relationship staying as an adult to an adult, as opposed to, like what you say, the roles reversing, where the aging parent once again kind of maybe becomes the child, the adult child is becoming the parent. So there's all different kinds of dynamics where roles can be reversed in this situation. But maintaining that consciousness through the process, from what I'm hearing, is...
Yeah, it's critical, because
yeah.
I think the tendency is, when they need our help in some ways, there is an assumption that we need to take over completely.
Mm-hmm.
And just because they need our assistance with some physical aspects does not mean that they need it, that they need us to manage the more cognitive processes for them. And that's where I see most of the conflict coming in these stages, is when there are assumptions that because we need to help them, then we just take over. And I know my mother frequently made the comment, you know, I need help walking across the street, but I can still think, thank you.
Oh, gosh.
And so that's the thing to keep in mind, and not to treat them like children just because they need our help in some other ways. So
you, one of the strong messages that you are somewhat alluding to and that you really talk about in your book is to include your parents in as much of the decision-making process as possible. So tell us why that is so important and how this helps them maintain a certain level of control over what's happening in their lives.
Well, I think partly it is very empowering when people are listened to. And only when we ask them what they truly want from the next stage – or from the next place they're living, or from this doctor's appointment, or from a trip to the store. I mean, it goes all the way down to the most mundane activities. Can we really respond according to what they need? We can't make the assumptions mm-hmm. about what they need. And the other thing is our parents, those who came through the Depression years, are called the silent generation. And they're called that because they were not brought up to be expressive about their feelings and their wants. And so you can't always get to that information without knowing how to ask them in many, many different ways. And so asking them gives them the opportunity to say, well, you know, I really don't like the way that works. I'd really like a different bed or a different couch or something like this in the new place.
So they need to be drawn out a little more.
They do need to be drawn out. And sometimes that happens in oblique ways. You can't always get to it by saying, what do you want? You might have to just talk to them about what's working and what's not working in their present household. And what would the next place feel like? What does that smell like? What does that taste like? In other words, draw them into some descriptions about their feelings as approaching it, as opposed to approaching it just from the aspect of saying, well, tell me what you want.
Because,
you know, very few of us, really, over the past 12 years of doing this type of work, when I ask people what they want, most of the time they can tell me what they don't want.
Right.
But they can't tell me what they want. But when you can get your parents to tell you what they don't want, that opens the door to other kinds of questions and some real information about how you can help them construct an environment that's really working for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because the homes that they're in were typically put together many, many years ago, and they've just learned to operate in them.
And they never changed.
And they never changed.
Right, right.
And even though it's not working for them, they may not be able to articulate
mm-hmm.
what it is that's not working
mm-hmm.
or what they want. But if you watch them as they maneuver through the house and they can find some things and can't find others and they can't get through the living room with their walker or whatever, you know, it's an opportunity to engage them. And even in the moving process, even though they may not be able to pack up boxes and haul them across the house, they're very adept at being able to go through a stack of their belongings and say, I'd like to keep this, I don't want to keep that,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to our making that decision.
I can see how that would be so empowering for them.
Well, it really is, because, you know, we came from a different time and space,
mm-hmm.
and what's valuable to us is not the same thing as what's valuable to them.
What else can we see in the Depression era parents? What else can younger children expect from this generation?
I think the salient thing to remember is that adults who went through the Depression learned that you never throw away anything. You keep everything, even a piece of string, a plastic lid to a container, pieces of foil, because if you don't need it, somebody else will.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about that is, because there was such emotion and hardship around survival, it created very real neural networks that hardwire in the brain. And some of this is being discovered through the new research in neuroscience. And once those are created, even though the environmental circumstances change, the emotional response doesn't change. So even though they may be living in a plentiful environment, still, the brain is working as though it's still locked into making those old choices. Don't throw that away. Somebody's mm-hmm. going to need that.
Mm-hmm. The emotional response.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to do with logic.
Yeah.
And so just being able to go through and know how to ask the right kinds of questions about that, as opposed to saying, oh, you're never going to use that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you can ask a question like, tell me more about this, or tell me what about this is important. Sometimes you can get to the story behind it and discover a different way to approach that. Or you may keep something for them that you would never keep for yourself, but it's important to them.
Mm-hmm. Makes them feel safe or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it makes them feel empowered.
Yeah.
Because then they trust the process, and that's the big thing. If you start making decisions for them, then and God forbid you make the wrong decision, then you've just interfered with the level of trust for the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can include them in the process and they trust that you're going to take their emotions and their feelings into account, then it opens the door for a really different kind of partnering through the process.
I think that is just fascinating, Nancy. So tell us then, what are some of the most important things that one should keep in mind when they're moving a parent to a new place to live? Are there some key points?
Well, other than involving them so much in the process, I think you first have to back up and determine the impetus for the move.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the move is a very proactive move and they can see the handwriting on the wall and know they want to be near kids or grandkids, and they are pretty mobile and still able to obviously get around and make different choices, then you can do a different type of planning with them. If they're making the move because it's the result of extenuating circumstances, a health issue or whatever, then automatically their options are more limited.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, whichever impetus is involved here, the most important thing is to consider would be how you can make this process more pleasant for them and how you can engage them in a way that gives them something to look forward to. Because moving forward, looking forward to something, is a very different creature than moving away from. And so you can talk about the things that they're looking forward to. And it may be simply what kind of colors do you want to use in your house, or who are the friends you want to stay in touch with, or what kind of climate do you want to move to, or what hobbies are you looking forward to. And they may be very different in this new circumstance. My mother, who was an avid bird watcher and a very assertive gardener, when she moved to her new place, didn't do as much gardening because she didn't have a yard that required so much work. She wasn't in the same birding population that she was leaving. So her interest shifted to doing some more internal things. She became a quilter. She made a quilt for every one of her great-grandchildren.
Wow.
And so when you talk about those things ahead of time, then not only does it give you a clue about the things that you need to unload on one end and you don't need to take with you, but it gives you a clue about what to look for on the other end. What is her access to groups and clubs and materials and people of like interest?
And this is a good conversation to have when, like, how, when is the best time really to talk to an aging parent about the inevitable day when they're going to have to move and what that will all look like?
I think it varies, obviously, and I know that's not a very definitive answer, but I think I would listen for opportunity when they start talking about, gee, I just don't seem to be able to keep up with the house anymore, or I just can't keep ahead of the yard work, those kinds of things. Those are good beginnings to conversations, and maybe it starts with, gee, Mom or Dad, is there a way that I can help take off some of the load, or is there anything that we could do in your current place that would help you stay here and feel less overwhelmed? And as that conversation progresses, then you might open the door slightly to the concept of choosing another place that would take off some of that load and leave them more discretionary time, make life easier. Always thinking in terms of the positive instead of the negative. But I think it has to be, in the ideal circumstance, it's done early and gradually, as opposed to, okay, Mom, we can see you can't handle this house anymore. It's time to move. We've picked out a place for you next door.
Right, right.
Which is not, it sounds extreme, but it's not unusual.
Really?
And, you know, when that kind of scenario happens, then all the doors are slammed.
Yeah.
And
it can be a very traumatic, if it's not done delicately or consciously, I think this could be a very traumatic experience for an elderly parent.
Well, it really is an extremely traumatic experience because They are beginning to see their time on Earth shorten, mm-hmm. and they can see it as a time of closing in as opposed to opening up. And I think so much of that has to do with how we handle that with them. And I know in my mother's case, this came on because of some health issues, but they weren't so severe that she needed to go into assisted living or a nursing home. She was able to go into an independent, sort of a condominium that was in a retirement community. But still, she was moving away from friends. She was moving away from history.
Everything was familiar there.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when she got to the new place, even though she was excited to be near me, she needed new things to look forward to. And so it can be extremely traumatic. And that's why, in addition to preparing the move in a very conscious way, we need to be extremely conscious about what happens when they get to the new location, because that activity, what happens from the day of move-in for the next 3 to 6 months, is going to make all the difference in the world in terms of whether or not they happily adapt.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is a priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Nancy Wesson, author of Moving Your Aging Parents. You can find out more about Nancy through her website, FocusOnSpace.com. So how do you outline that then in your book? Talk to us about the important key areas in making their new home feel familiar and that they're enjoying their new life.
Well, partly it has to do with the things that are chosen, you know, to come along with them. You want to bring along the most important things, and all of that's going to depend on how much room they've got and what kind of a living circumstance they're going to be in. Make sure that they have things around them that bring up good memories, that support them emotionally and physically and all of that. But once those things are taken care of, then real life begins. And so they need to know how they're going to get to the grocery store. You know,
Where is the grocery store?
Right. How do I get there? Gosh, I don't know this city. I'm afraid of driving. Mm-hmm. That four-way stop scares the daylights out of me. Can we find another route? Mm-hmm. And so with my mother, we did some practice runs first, my driving. Then we did practice runs with her driving so that she got comfortable mm-hmm. with some very basic routes. So getting to and from, and if they can't drive any longer, they're too intimidated by the city, which is not unusual, find what the community transportation is like. Most retirement communities have weekly transportation to things like grocery store and pharmacy and libraries and that sort of thing. So there are lots of ways to fill in the blanks. The other thing would be to help them replace the communities that they're leaving with new ones. They're going to be new people, and that's going to take some time. But if they're birders, for example, you might find out what the local birding groups are. Mm-hmm. If they're readers, where's the library? If they're game players, is there a bridge group? nearby so that you begin to, and quickly, very quickly. I mean, don't let it go 2 or 3 weeks
mm-hmm.
because they will have become depressed
right.
and decided this is not working. So as soon as humanly possible, after the move has been made, help them start making those connections and do it in a way that they're beginning to reclaim their autonomy and don't put all of their well-being on your shoulders.
Good point. So are you saying then that it's very important to start reestablishing, helping them reestablish a routine?
Yes, a routine, their daily rituals, new communities, new connections, travel routes, so that they reclaim as much control as possible as quickly as possible. And that may mean also connecting them with new primary care physicians, for example.
Oh, yes, and I think that generation as well, that's a big thing for that generation to make sure they know their doctor, they know how to get to their doctor.
That's right.
Yes.
Because some of them have a more frequent relationship with their physician than they do anybody else.
True.
In the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
In my mother's situation, we found her a new cardiologist within a week.
Wow.
And so it put her mind at ease because
yes.
she had a pacemaker and she knew she needed to have it checked. So that generation was frequently very concerned about getting the details in place
mm-hmm.
early. So that's another conversation to have. Okay, Mom, what's the most important thing for you to sort of get in place in the beginning? And they'll have some ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for us to make that assumption might be right for us, but not right for them.
Not right for them. I love this idea that you have about not assuming anything, and it really is something that you emphasize over and over again in your book. And you really, I mean, you guide the adult child exactly what areas to question and how to question. I mean, you have put so much energy and intention into this book. It really, I mean, it's a very, very helpful guidebook.
Thank you. Well, you know, I think I said this in the introduction, but it is so true. Every new event with my mother became a chapter.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Or an exercise. I thought, wow, I hadn't thought of that. Wow, other people will need to know this. Let's do a section on that.
Is this how you came up then with the 9 life domains?
Well, actually, that comes from a very ancient practice that turns out to be very relevant for today, and the name of that practice is Feng Shui.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. But there are other disciplines that look at life domains, but none of them are as straightforward as this because we all live those aspects of life. We may do them individually and uniquely, but they happen to be just a perfect way to look at how you set up a house, how you set up a life, how you recreate a life,
mm-hmm.
and be sure that nothing falls through the cracks.
You know, looking at those now, it's, of course, I know about Feng Shui. I don't know why when I first looked at them, I didn't put it together.
And, you know, that was purposeful for me because I wanted people to really understand the emphasis is on how you use the practical aspects of that
mm-hmm.
and not assuming because it's feng shui, it's something that is unfamiliar and we don't quite know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you label things to start out with, sometimes you embrace some people and turn other people away. And what I wanted to really capture from that is what's really, really practical and works on a day-to-day basis.
Mm. Oh, it makes so much sense the way you've laid it out. I love that.
Thank you.
Yes. Now, let's talk a little bit about Feng Shui application. And when you've moved a parent to a new location and how you are actually setting up the new home, so what kind of considerations do you talk about in your book regarding that?
Well, quite a few, actually. One of the things that I look at is arrangement of the bedroom. Because sleeping is so critical to our sense of well-being and our ability to handle other stresses that just where you position a bed in the room for greatest privacy, where you position the bed can make a difference between a wonderful night's sleep and waking up, you know, periodically through the night, or just not being able to sleep at all. Mm. And another situation is how to set up the living room. And one of the basic concepts in feng shui is when you walk into a living area, say from the front door, you want to feel that you're walking into open arms. You want it to really wrap its arms around you when you stand there. And it turns out that people feel so much more comfortable in those kinds of sitting arrangements. And then when you put that together with other aspects of special needs, and you look at seating arrangements in terms of how they support that person's sense of well-being, one of the things to take into account is whether they're looking into the glare. So all of this is melded together in this book, because feng shui really looks at ergonomics, which is making a place work for the work that it does, psychology, how does it support you emotionally, and how does it support you spiritually, and that falls into place in so many different levels, even to the degree of, I guess, scrutiny about where you put things so that they are automatic for you. Mm-hmm. There are certain rules of thumb in feng shui that are addressed in the book, but there are many, many subtleties about it that are addressed in different ways.
You know, I have gone into homes or specific rooms before and after someone's gone in and applied feng shui principles, mm-hmm. and it is dramatic how a room or a home will feel so much differently once just a few things have been moved or added or subtracted even. You know, it is really powerful.
It is very powerful, and people feel it at a real visceral level.
Yes.
This is not an intellectual practice. It sounds like it's theoretical, but when you put it into place in a real physical space, it's stunning, the difference it can make. For example, one of the strong rules in feng shui is you don't sit with your back to the door. And, you know, that makes sense from a logical level, but people say, well, no, I feel really safe in my house. There's no reason for me not to do that. But then when you change things around, it's like they finally take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Because, you know, part of us is always scanning our environment for safety just because we're creatures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And feng shui acknowledges that and has known about those things for many thousands of years. And the interesting thing about it is science has finally come around and been able to measure some of these connections and explain them.
In a person?
Well, for example, we know that in feng shui, one of the basic precepts, I guess, is that first of all, you think about what you want out of life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably too complicated for just a telephone interview, but the connection between knowing what you want and living in a space where you consciously set that up so that everything that you see in your space reminds you of what you want, then helps you change your thought patterns. When you change your thought patterns and the emotional underpinning of that, you change brain chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And when you change brain chemistry,
everything
shifts.
So why is this so important for this move of an elderly parent? Why do you think that applying feng shui to the new home is critical?
Well, I think it's critical with every move.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, whether or not it's an elderly parent. It's my focus of this book because it was the focus of my life for so many years. But it makes the difference in every move, regardless of age or circumstance. However, I think when you are dealing with the situation of moving elder parents, those kinds of comfort become more and more critical, because they are not in a position to go out and independently change a lot of things. They are spending a lot of time in their interior environments, and it is a very fast, effective, supportive way to get them to feel very comfortable and feel at home from the first moment they move in.
Mm-hmm.
When you're younger and you're busy, and you've got families going on and so on and so forth, you're much more adaptable to change on a moment-to-moment basis.
So You can even apply some of these principles to assisted living facilities and nursing homes?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, you have less control in terms of where beds are placed and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're choosing facilities, I think these are very useful things to keep in the back of your mind. For instance, are all of the beds in this particular facility are they in line with the door? If they are, I don't want my mother living there. She's not going to have any privacy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, does she have privacy in her room? Where is the bed positioned? Does she have room for her belongings? You know, what's the lighting? What's the color? I can't tell you how many times I've walked into facilities where the walls are sort of a gray beige brown.
Institution color.
Institutions,
mm-hmm.
right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing supportive about that.
Right.
So when you take a look at all of the things that feng shui embraces, light, color, sound, privacy, placement, and then you take that mental grid, I guess, into evaluating the possibilities for where our parents move, then it gives you sort of a structure in which to make choices. And so let's assume then you make those choices. Then you say, okay, now that I'm here, how can I set up this space using these principles in a way that's going to be the most supportive place that it can be?
That's beautiful. That is really fascinating that you can, even still, in a situation where you think you really didn't have any control, like in a nursing home, that you still do have options.
Well, I think you really still do have options.
Mm-hmm.
I think they narrow a bit, but it's all a matter of being able to optimize whatever situation you're in,
mm-hmm.
both from before you move in, from the aspect of making choices, and then once you're in, how you optimize it.
Now, you include in your book, towards the end, you go into some of the warning signs that one may see in a parent that maybe isn't handling the transition well. So what kind of advice do you have for handling this adjustment period? I know we somewhat touched on it, but can
mm-hmm.
you go a little further?
Well, this question comes up a lot, actually, because that first 6 months of any transition is going to be tough because they're in that zone where they don't yet know their way around, they haven't made deep connections and that sort of thing. But
there's almost a point, I think, where there's a shutdown process, because I've seen this in my own grandparents.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there is, and I think some of it has to do with whether or not you're in a location where you can have frequent visits.
Mm-hmm.
But I think visiting often is one thing to keep in mind that's going to help ease that transition. I know one of the things that's very helpful is for a parent to know that you really are going to come. They're going to see you once a week.
Mm-hmm.
They can really count on either a telephone conversation with you or a visit from you or some kind of interaction that lets them know you're still paying attention. They haven't been abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes that can be handled through a telephone call, especially if you're living 500 miles away. You might plan on Sunday morning breakfast, for example, because that's something that they can look forward to all week or look forward to the phone call. Get them engaged in whatever activities are available within their retirement complex. Make sure they go to breakfast when breakfast is offered to the degree that they can. If they're games, find out which ones they like to go to and help them make those connections or urge them. I know my mother knew that she was not going to adjust well if she didn't make herself go to some of these things
mm-hmm.
in the beginning. And then she did go, and she met people, and she formed the sweetest relationships.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And even though she, too, dug her heels in a little bit, well, more than a little bit,
mm-hmm.
you know, in those first 6 months, she was convinced that this was she was not going to like this.
Yeah.
And toward, I guess, after about 8 months or whatever, we would hear her say, oh, I had the best time today.
Wow.
You know, I made this new friend. Mm. And you could see that she was actually creating some of the very best, most supportive friendships of her adult life.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And I
but
guess,
it took some time.
Yes.
And to know that you can't fix everything, sometimes you just need to listen and to say, yeah, Mom, I know this has got to be really frustrating. Because so often when a person complains, and this is not just limited to our parents, but you hear a complaint, especially from somebody that you love and you really want to help, and we translate that into needing to fix it.
Right.
And
yes.
We can't always fix it, and they don't always want it fixed.
Right.
They just need to be heard, and you can say, boy, I can tell you're really ticked off about that. And sometimes that's all it takes. They need a sounding board. And
a lot of times that's the only sounding board they really have, isn't it?
Well, it is.
Yes.
Because they don't want to alienate their new friends.
Right.
And they need to express their anger somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you're much more likely to express it to people you know won't turn away from you over on the long haul. And that's your kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so don't take it personally.
Personal, right.
And that's the biggest one. Do not take this personally. This is not always about you or that you didn't make the right decision or any of those things. Sometimes it just is.
Yeah. So, Nancy, how's your mother doing today?
My mother died in May.
I'm so sorry. I didn't know that.
Well, you know, I have made a point of it, and I didn't include it in the book
mm-hmm.
Because the book was really to press. Well, it was finished before she died, but I think the thing that I would like people to know about this is that when she was diagnosed in May, my mother had always sort of held people at arm's length, and the very community that we had tried so carefully to create for her in her new home absolutely rallied and came to her and supported her in ways that she had never, ever allowed people to care for her.
Wow.
And it was truly a beautiful symbiotic relationship. And I think she finally got it in the last 2 or 3 months of her life.
Really? That's
she
beautiful.
Was able to taste the sweetness of life.
Mm.
And it was because we had taken such care to help her create this scenario. I mean, truly, truly, it is never too late.
To be
able to do these things for your parents.
Yeah, that is so powerful, Nancy. Thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Beautiful. Wow, on that note, I really would like to mention your website. Our time here is coming to an end, so let's mention focusonspace.com, and I know that you are in the midst of developing a website for your book as well.
I am.
Yes. It's not
quite finished, but it will be up and running and very soon now, and there will be a link on my standard website that can click you over to the book website.
Great, great. And so what's next for you?
Well, I'm working on another book.
I imagine you are. Is it in this same area with aging parents? Yeah.
I have a couple of books in my head.
Mm-hmm.
One of them still has to do with this topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it, most of the work that I do has to do with managing your personal energy and resources in one way or another.
Ooh.
To create the kind of life that you want and that works for you. And so it'll be connected to that in some way. I do a lot of work with peak performance and ADHD and using these tools to really manage environment and energy and that sort of thing. So I'm sure there's a book on that coming out as well.
Wow, yes, you could write on many, many topics. So I am very excited to see how the years progress in the books that you put out. So I know we're going to have you back on the program again in the future.
Thank you very much. This has been delightful. I appreciate your time so much.
Yes, you too, Nancy. Thank you so much for coming on the program today.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, listeners, that's been Nancy Wesson. What a great interview, so much information, and a fantastic book. Really, she has packed so much information into this book, and it's very, very heart-centered. So I truly hope that you check it out. The book, once again, is Moving Your Aging Parents, and her website is focusonspace.com. She'll be having a book website created very, very shortly, and you'll find links through her focusonspace.com site. So thank you so much for tuning in and listening to Inside Scoop Live today. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.